top with Giordano. Two on one. Michael Backlund shoots. Scores!
Penning. Great move. Here is Penning. Shot. Scores!
Comes free to Shane. Locked by Lucic. Ran him over.
And he wins it back to Foley. Scores!
No way! Oh, my! No way!
Kurt Fiddler backhand.
Oh, my!
It is. Now we're waiting.
Slides it in front, scores! Jason
Chimura! Checked in by Matthews, here it is, scores!
5 minutes into overtime, in game five, and McDavid scores! Game winner, series winner, for Connor McDavid!
I have been a murder man for all my life, and I'll be a murder man.
Welcome back to the 2 Mutts Podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Marshall, and we are presented by Pete's Concrete. Our next guest is waiting in the wing. This is his first time on the 2 Mutts Podcast, so we won't wait any longer. Let's get to our interview with Chris Cutfert from Rogers Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada.
If it's done right the first time, you don't have to redo it. If you get Pete's Concrete to pour your driveway, you don't need a repeat. When your patio is a PDO, you don't need a repeat. When Pete's Concrete fixes your sidewalk, all it takes is once. You don't need a repeat. And if your basement leaks, a Pete's repair helps avoid a repeat. Get it done right the first time with the colors and textures you want so you don't have to redo it. For concrete, you can choose Pete's or repeats. Pete's Concrete.
Our NHL News and Notes segment is brought to you by Sheena Boychuk. Yes, you heard that last name right. That's Sheena Boychuk. As a licensed realtor, Sheena has you covered to buy and sell your home in this hot market. She also offers home consulting services to help you upgrade your living space. Check her website out at SheenaBoychuk.com and tell her the 2 Mutts Podcast sent you. Realty by Design, your design approach to real estate. Mutts fans, our next guest was the voice of CFL on TSN and CBC for many, many years, and he has been involved in the National Hockey League for 40 plus years. He's covered the Olympics. He has been recognized as the best broadcaster several times. He's won several awards for his great play-by-play calls. We'd like to welcome Chris Cutfert from Hockey Night Canada and Rogers Sportsnet to the 2 Mutts Podcast. Chris, how's it going?
Joshua, good to be with you. Mike Fuda speaks very highly of you, and I speak very highly of Mike Fuda, so this should be good.
Yeah, let's talk about him as we get going here off the top, because without him, this interview doesn't get going, and I'm excited to have you on. I've listened to you for several years in my living room, and watching you on the tube, but the connection you have with Mike Fuda, is amazing, and also ties into just this a couple days ago was Amazing Grace's 19th birthday, and we obviously miss and love her a lot, and what she did and continues to do to help others that are fighting a battle. That's what ties this interview together. Can you kind of shed some light on Mike and obviously the story of Amazing Grace too?
Well, I go back with Mike to junior hockey. He was involved in Owen Sound. I was involved with the Guelph Storm for a period of time. But I think where our real connection is Mike seemed to think when the Kings went on their run to the Stanley Cups that I happened to be a luck charm. I did a lot of the games, and it seemed every time I came in to do a game for the Kings, then they won. I never reminded Mike that they usually won anyway, whether I was there or not. But because of my connection with the Guelph Storm and Drew Doughty, I think he thought, there was some extra karma going on. So that was that. He's a good man. He's a good hockey man. He's one of the best people you'll meet in hockey.
Yeah, he definitely is. He definitely is for sure. And that story of him and obviously Justin Williams being tied to Amazing Grace, it's a heartwarming story, isn't it, CC?
It is. It's and you know what? Throughout the game, you find people that make connections, and and really rise to support great causes. And that's what Mike has done. And that was the premise of coming on. I would have come on anyway, but for a great cause, it's even more special.
Yeah, it definitely helps it out. And we thank our sponsors and our team here at the podcast to help with that and help continue where with raising funds for those that need. And also back here, we're here in Alberta, and Ben Stelter was a very heartwarming story for us here in Alberta, but it captivated the hockey community, and that's another one that we kind of work with. And Ron McLean, who's a good friend of yours with the Child Advocacy Center in Red Deer too. There's so many great causes, but this game has so many great people, Chris, and I can't thank the community enough for getting behind and doing these interviews to help us shed some light on that. And let's kind of talk about your career here. Obviously started in 1984 in Montreal, from what I understand, it's quite a long ago, obviously, but the great career you've had and continue to have, and obviously you being in everyone's living room, but did you ever vision where you were when you started? Was this a goal of yours to get to where you are, obviously, in being a play-by-play commentator? Or did you get it? How did that all kind of start for you? And then who gave you your first break, I guess, along the early?
Oh, man, I've had so many breaks that, and it goes back a little bit before 84 in Montreal. Actually, I started at CJAD in Montreal. It was my first major market stop, but I was dipping my toe in the water before that. I went to Queen's University, and I was lucky enough that they had a radio station at Queen's that not only did some sports coverage, but they actually did live coverage of hockey and football. And the year I got involved, the football team won the Vanier Cup. The hockey team was coached by Freddie O'Donnell, who was on a Bruins team. He was one of the young guys on the Bruins team. He wasn't there for the Cups, but he was there just before they got going. And Freddie always treated me like I was one of the guys on the team. So the involvement with university got me going. It got me my first job because I had that tape with play-by-play experience. It got me a job in Yorkton, Saskatchewan, the voice of an SJHL team, the Yorkton Terriers. And I tell the story often, but it kind of sums up where I was going and where this guy was going. A 15-year-old came up on our first road trip in Yorkton, and he sat beside me and he introduced himself. He said, "I'm Ken Danico, and I'm going to play in the NHL one day." And I thought, boy, we're sharing the same dream, sort of. I'm not going to play, but to have Ken Danico and the Banners in Newark and the Stanley Cup championships, really proud to have watched that from the very beginning. And so, even as a kid, I went to bed with the radio on every night, listening to hockey, listening to Dan Kelly on KMOX, or even Bob Cole on CBC Radio, or Foster Hewitt. So I would lay in bed at night thinking, man, that would be the ultimate job. But I actually didn't dare to dream that big. I guess I dreamed it, but I didn't believe it was possible. And only when I got to Queens did I start making connections that, you've been given this opportunity, this vehicle, maybe you should run with it. So, but breaks, you ask about breaks. So one of the biggest breaks I got, I did get the job in Montreal on the recommendation of Kurt Kilback. And Kurt and I had never met at the time, but Kurt had also worked in small market Yorkton, Saskatchewan. And I guess he was driving through one day and heard me and thought, oh, okay, that guy might have some potential. And a friend of his was my future boss in Montreal. And so when Bob Dunn, who was the sports director in Montreal, happened to be back home in Winnipeg and was a friend of Kurt's and said, do you know anybody that might work cheaply in radio in Montreal? And Kurt says, well, I don't know him, but I heard there was this kid from down east or from the east that had left Yorkton and gone back east because I had left to go to Kingston. And he said he might be interested in the job. So long story longer, that kind of was the first of many huge breaks for me.
Yeah, that's and it obviously nice when people believe in you too. And you know, I can tie that back to Mike Fuda, who's helped me out tremendously through this 5-year journey of this podcast and the relationship I've built with him and the relationships you gain across you know, this great country and this great story that happens. You know, we'll go to the CFL here, obviously inducted into the Hall of Fame, the media wing side there. And how special was that moment, and you know, calling the CFL games? And I guess I have to ask, like, do you miss it a lot? You know, obviously going right to the full NHL coverage. You know, obviously Rod Smith and Dustin Nielsen doing a great job, and many others. But
absolutely,
yeah. You know, how precious are those days that you had in the CFL?
Well, extremely. I still miss it. You know, I was walking into the Bell Center last week, and a couple of fans who were in to watch the game from the Hamilton area came up to me, and we were chatting a bit, and they said, you know, they asked me the same question, and I do miss it a lot. It was one of those dreams that we were talking about. I grew up a huge CFL fan. Russ Jackson was one of my heroes, and that goes way back before most of the people watching this, but not that I want to date Russ, but I will date myself. It was special I thought the league was as special for me as growing up watching the Leafs as well. So Russ Jackson was a hero of mine. Red Kelly and Daryl Sittler were heroes of mine. Bob Gibson of the St. Louis Cardinals was another. But I wanted to be involved in the CFL. And I mentioned at Queens I had a chance to talk or to do football play-by-play. So it was a life lesson, though, because I did join CBC in 84, and I never got to call a game until 91. I was the voice of the Alouettes and the Concords radio in Montreal, and I thought I was ready for this opportunity. And 7 years later, I finally got the opportunity. Don Whitman was at a World Track and Field Championships in Japan, so I got my first chance, and it was a Labor Day game, 1991. So the Argos were on their way to the Grey Cup with Pinball Clemens and Rocket Ishmael and some of the great names in football. The Ticats were the host team. They had just fired their coach. They hadn't won a game that year. And so my first game looked like it was going to be a rout. It was going to be all Argos, but the CFL being the CFL, especially on Labor Day, expect the unexpected. And the Ticats won that game. It was a thriller. Lots of big plays, a chance to showcase that maybe I had a chance to contribute on the CFL on CBC. And again, Hamilton won the game. It was a great game. And after that, they kind of said, you know what, we're going to try and work you in. So just a little sidebar story about that. And it kind of sums up what the CFL is all about. Lee Knight was a Canadian running back for the Ticats, and I mentioned some of those huge names for the Argos. The Stars were out, but Lee Knight scored 2 touchdowns in that game and made some big plays. And about 20 years later, I'm on the field, and I'm not sure, I can't remember if it was Ivor Wynn or Tim Horton's field, and Lee Knight's daughter came up to me, and she introduced herself, and I said, man, I said, my first football game, your dad was a star. And she rolled her eyes and she said, yeah, we hear about it all the time. But, you know, it's great that when an unsung guy gets to grab the stage and the spotlight. And so often that happens in the CFL, and it's great.
Yeah, it's such a great game. And I got to ask you, where do you see the game right now? It feels like they had a really great season this past year, and there's going to be some momentum going into this next season. Obviously, we lost the season because of COVID, but it seems like the league is at a very healthy place now. Where are your thoughts with that?
Yeah, it's been a slow build back. It really got hit maybe more than any other of the main sports by COVID, and I did have some concerns, but I don't anymore. Again, there's some great people right across the league, and the hardest thing for me in the CFL is choosing a team to cheer for. I was an Ottawa Rough Rider fan because I grew up in Toronto, and the Blackouts kept me from seeing the Argos and the Ticats. So I'd watch Ottawa, Russ Jackson and Ronnie Stewart and Whit Tucker, these great Canadian players and great American players like Vic Washington and Margene Atkins, who ended up going to the NFL. Bo Scott went to the NFL after Jim Brown retired and played for the Cleveland Browns. So I became an NFL fan through the guys that left the CFL to play there, but the CFL was always top of mind for me, and so it's great to see them back. And a long-winded answer, but the Grey Cup again just was so incredible, and Rod Smith was great, and there was another surprise team, the Alouettes, on a last play. You know, it's what the Grey Cup of the CFL is all about. And it was special. And I left it in good hands, certainly, because Rod's outstanding and Dustin's been lighting it up. And Marshall Ferguson, they've got some young energy going now on the broadcast, and it's great.
Yeah, it definitely is. It definitely is, for sure. It's a good pastime, and it's continued to grow. And, you know, you got the great voices there that you said are doing a great job on the evil telecom, as Elliot Friedman likes to say, TSN. But let's move over to, you know, the mentorship side here. I'm big on hearing what other people are, their journey and on who mentored them and who helped them. We kind of touched on it a little bit earlier. But and you brought up Don Whitman's name, but how many great mentors did you have? Obviously the Bob Coles, and there's so many greats that were before you, you know, Jim Houston too, you know, and many others, you know, Doc Emmerich over in the US. There's so many great people that were along the way, but was there someone that kind of stands out to you that was a mentor to you along the way that maybe I didn't even name? Maybe there's someone that I don't know that I didn't bring up.
Right. Well, there's a million names. Yeah. And, you know, when you join Hockey Night in Canada in 1984 and you're on the same team as Dave Hodge and Dick Irvin and Mickey Redmond and Bob Cole and Harry Neal, and I think Ron started about the same time as me. In fact, I met Ron McLean a day or two before my first ever Hockey Night game because he was doing his first Calgary Flames regional broadcast on the Thursday before my first Saturday. But the name I'll give you, and I grew up listening to Dave, and I was in awe of Dave. And I think for a long time, I did a poor imitation of Dave. Instead of being myself, I was trying to do it the way Dave Hodge would do it. And I even hear that in some of my early 80s broadcasts, and I'm thinking, man, I was almost trying to mimic his style. But I'll give you another name, because I got to work closely for a long time with Dick Irvin. And when I was first hired by Hockey Night in Canada, Ralph Mellenby said, we want you to host for a while. We want you to go and watch Dick, and that will kind of be your template of how to do it. And it was the best and it was the worst thing you could do for a young guy, I think. And the reason what was the best is because nobody does it better. And Dick is such a gentleman. He is such a class act. And he is such an amazing broadcaster. And I say worst because it was intimidating. You go into the studio and watch Dick, and he doesn't have any notes. And they say, Dick, we need 45 seconds to fill. And he'll look into the camera, and he'll do 44.5 seconds and then throw it right on cue. And you're thinking, man, I'll never be able to do that. So it was daunting. But and then I got to share the broadcast booth with him. And the first time I sat in that spot at the Forum in hallowed territory, and he turns to me and says, you know who usually sat in that seat? And of course, it's Danny Galvan. And you're already in awe. You're yeah. already nervous. But he's just reminding you that, you know, you have to live up to a certain standard. And that is almost an impossible standard in sitting in the same chair as Danny Galvan. But I think he was trying to say, respect where you are and give it everything you've got. And I think I always felt that every time I walked into the Forum, not just because of Danny, just because of the environment. And I didn't grow up as a Montreal Canadiens fan, but it very, in very short order, you felt that every time you walked into the rink. that it was you were in hallowed territory and you know, you wanted to do your best. And so, yeah, Dick was a very special mentor. In fact, I still trade emails with him. And the most recent was just a week ago when he reminded me as the playoffs were about to begin that Rocket Richard might not be the top guy in terms of goals, but he was close to the top in terms of goals per game of the playoffs. And I looked it up and he was right after Bossy and Lemieux, Rockets number three. So love the man and love the influence he had on me and what the legacy he left the show.
Yeah, it's definitely great. And now you're paving the way and a lot of young people are looking up to you. Is there any advice you would give, you know, a young broadcaster in the industry kind of coming up, anything that you would pass on to them that are listening to this that might be helpful for them in their journey as they try to follow you and the other greats that have, you know, got to be on the tube on the pipes there?
Well, it is possible. You need a lot of luck. Yeah. And, you know, I would say a couple of things. Be authentic, be yourself. I mentioned the Dave Hodge story, and it certainly doesn't hurt to aspire to being somebody like Dave Hodge, but you have to do it your way. And you know what I've also learned as an old guy, I've learned, you know, embrace all of the moments. I now have a greater appreciation for being the voice of the Yorkton Terriers and what that was like on the early part of the journey more now and how special that was maybe than at the time. And also being able to work with, you know, I look back fondly at working with so many great people and I sometimes dial back and think, oh, it'd be nice to work again with him or him. And you know what? Just embrace the moment when it's there because it's kind of like a river. It flows on.
Yeah.
And appreciate the times you had and now live in the moment you're in. And I certainly am embracing even the moment I'm in now. I've fulfilled the dream of calling some Stanley Cups and would like to call a Stanley Cup final that is won by a Canadian team. That may or may not happen. But even just this season, when you think about what we've witnessed this year, Connor McDavid knocking on the door of 100 assists and Austin Matthews closing in on 70 goals. And there's still two other guys that may end up higher than them in the Hart Trophy voting because Nikita Kucherov and Nathan MacKinnon have had such brilliant seasons. It's we've had quite a ride this year and
we have,
can't wait for the playoffs. So yeah.
Well, and we'll get to that for sure. Cause you know, Paul Bissonnette was on with us with Mike Fuda earlier in the year. And we talked about the momentum going into this year and it's lived up to the hype in every which way, obviously. And you've touched on a lot of great players that have having great years, but one of the things I wanted to get to is obviously you did get to call the Stanley Cup final. You know, I know that was a big thing for you and the Tampa Bay Lightning over the Montreal Canadiens. And it was, you know, a very special moment. And I have to imagine how great that was for you and, you know, and all the great games you got to cover and we'll get to the Olympic coverage too. But, you know, when you got that call and it's been a few now since you've had it, you know, how meaningful and grateful was that? And obviously getting to do it with a great person and Craig Simpson too.
Yeah, it's really special. I think back, it's funny that night. And I think, you know, Montreal had such a great run. They surprised a lot of people winning the first round against Toronto. I was surprised that they swept Winnipeg. I think not everybody was expecting they'd beat Vegas. But when it got to the point of 3-1 in the Stanley Cup final, I think we knew when we were in Tampa that night was going to be the final night. And I happened to meet Barb Underhill, who I've worked with in figure skating for years, and she was the skating coach for the Lightning, and she was coming in for the celebration and being part of it. And I thought, man, the connections you make on the way are sometimes you don't even realize that where you're going to end up again with somebody like Barb, and watching her win a Stanley Cup in her role with the Lightning. But yeah, it's special because, you know, for a lot of years I got to do the conference finals, and they were special too, but there was always something kind of lacking. You know, I you talk about 93 and the last time a Canadian team won, and I was 93, and I was along for that amazing ride for the Canadians. And I think they went into overtime 10 times or won 10 overtime games. I'm not sure if I called six or seven of those, but that journey, I mean, to think back and that the Canadians were down 2-0 to Quebec in the series. And I believe it was 2-0. They were down in game three and came back to win that in overtime. And suddenly everything started to fall into place on the way to a Stanley Cup championship. And I only bring that up because you get to the conference final and then you're done. And you know that there's so much more of that story left to tell. So yeah, that's something after 40 years that I did want that opportunity before it was over. And that's why I loved covering the CFL, because since 96, you know, you got to call the Grey Cup, and there was always closure to the season. And there was always that historic stuff that was left behind, the legacy of championship teams and the legacy. And Saskatchewan fans hate when I bring it up, but they, you know, the too many men call and those moments that are left in sporting lore that you never forget. So I got to call every city in this Canadian Football League winning a Grey Cup, which was special. The last one I called was Winnipeg, and that was the first time I'd got to call a Blue Bomber Grey Cup. But you know, that was special, and I'm surely not going to be around long enough to call every Canadian team winning a Stanley Cup. But I have had great moments with every one of the franchises, and that's special. And just give me one Canadian team winning a cup.
Yeah, and that will be a very beautiful day when it hopefully it happens. And you know, we got a great there's four great teams going to the dance here, and hopefully one of them gets over to that. But we'll move over just the Olympic coverage real quick. You know, another great, obviously great moment. And you know, I'm a big fan of TSN Overdrive, and I know that some of those guys are your dear friends too, and they've been on this podcast. And one of the things I love is Jeff O'Neill always kind of talks about, like, how does a play-by-play guy, like, how does he go into that day, like that game, obviously the golden goal called by Sidney, like that you called by, you know, Crosby scoring it. Is how much preparation goes into that, a moment like that? Or is that just all natural and it's just the moment just gives the moment? Or is there, obviously you have to prepare a lot, I would assume, but you know, in that moment, how special was that? Obviously in Canada, in Vancouver, and a great play by Iggy to get it to him. How special was that for you too?
Well, for me, I just wanted to get the call right. And to be honest, the golden goal had not been on my mind until the intermission of before overtime. And I, because it was such a big game and kind of a career highlight for me, and it was an afternoon game, I didn't sleep the night before. So I was kind of fired up and on adrenaline for a lot of it. And then you get to the final minute and you think it's going to end and Zach Parise scores and now the game's tied and you're going to overtime. And I kind of felt like I was losing a little bit of concentration in the overtime period. So somebody asked me to go on a radio interview, and Ray Ferraro was not doing the game, but sitting beside me, and I agreed to go on this radio interview, and he looked at me like, what are you doing? And I thought, I got to keep engaged. I got to keep my my train of thought. And I wanted to just stay alert. And when that was done, I kind of exhaled and I thought, okay, we're going to overtime. If this was soccer, the next goal would be the golden goal. And I kind of went, that little eureka moment. I thought, okay, that's good. That's what we're going to use. So you prep forever. And then I honestly didn't prep for overtime. I wasn't even sure of the rules, which might sound unprofessional, and maybe it is, but Ron Wilson was the coach of Team USA, and he told me he wasn't sure about the overtime rules either. You're so in the moment of anyway
of a 60-minute hockey game, right?
No, yeah, yeah, it we hadn't gone we I guess there was a shootout there had been a shootout. Canada was in a shootout with Switzerland earlier, but anyway, it was not what I was thinking of at the time. So I'm glad the golden goal came out, and I was a little surprised at how much it took hold, and people kind of thought I invented the term, and I was kind of sheepish about that because I'm thinking, no, the golden goal is a common sports phrase, but it just happened to be the perfect time to use it. So yeah. It's the highlight of my career. I hope I have one to match. I'll just give you a brief story. The day before, you mentioned Doc Emmerich, the day before we were together doing the bronze medal game, and we were kind of just chit-chatting, and Al Michaels came over. And I remember in 1980 going back to Yorkton, sitting in a $150 a month apartment, watching a black and white portable of the Miracle on Ice, thinking, man, if I could ever have a moment like that in broadcasting, you know, all this would be worthwhile, not believing that it would ever happen. And anyway, I'm introduced to Al Michaels, who I think is the best broadcaster, play-by-play man who's ever done it. And I did say to Al, I said, we won't have a moment like yours, but I hope we have a moment. Yes. And 24 hours later, we did. So
yeah, that's very special for sure. Yeah, it just gives me chills because I remember that day. I remember where I was, and just a beautiful day for sure. Great call as all of them are. So let's transition over to the here and now in the current NHL state. Full disclosure, most people that listen to this podcast know, but you're new to it. But I'm a diehard Leafs fan, Chris, and so I live here in Alberta, and I've had some tough years. But
I didn't know that, and you got to walk on thin ice when you're dealing with Alberta guys, and you don't know if you should bring Toronto up. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's the one thing I've learned since going back to Hockey Night in Canada.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, yeah, big Leaf fan, and obviously Brad Tree living what he's done, and years ago I was going through some mental health stuff, and he reached out, and Travis Hamonic, who and the story that he does to help out kids, and I lost my father at a young age, and I was 33 when I reached out for some help, and Travis helped me, and Brad Tree living helped me, and to that I owe a huge allegiance to them. And I look at Brad as, a busy general manager. Every day is a Monday for him, and what he did for me in a little window, and how much I would appreciate a day that he gets to, hoist that Stanley Cup. And obviously he's a great person too, but you've covered this team a lot. You've been around the game a lot. Is there something different about this Leafs team? Like James Myrtle just tweeted some great stats out that they got the most amount of wins and the most amount of goals scored in the last 28 games, I think 20 wins, and they're doing good right now. They're humming along, and they're still fighting for home ice against Florida. Where are you at with the Leafs and what this could look like for them in the playoffs?
Well, I just wanted to say I agree with you about Brad. He's a special guy, and you noticed even in a very small way in our broadcast, and I'm not suggesting he's bringing us into the team, but because that's the team is very separate from a local broadcast or a national broadcast. But Brad has tried to develop communication lines that I've been really impressed with. That right from the start of the season, he kind of reached out. What can we do to help you? Tell our stories better. It's something that doesn't often happen in the game, but he's a good man, and he's an easy guy to cheer for. I will say there's a lot of easy people to cheer for in this business, and we started with Mike Fuda, and he's one of them too. But you can go right across the board with every team, and there's good people. I'm interested in how the Leafs have developed during the year, because what Brad Treleving did early in the year to kind of lay the foundation didn't have immediate results. And you can go back into pre-Christmas and people are saying, well, Bertuzzi didn't work. And Max Domi really hasn't clicked here. And John Klingberg obviously didn't click. And there were a lot of moves that were made that didn't pay instant dividends. But here's where Brad Treliving, I think, excelled as much as anybody possibly could in his role. And that's when Ilya Samsonov needed help. And he needed a reset. And what Treliving did there was a stroke of genius because he helped him step aside and put him in a position where he could regroup. And I think a lot of us believe that Ilya Samsonov was done with the Leafs, that he was not going to play either an important role or maybe or any role at all. But Brad's a great people person, and he took Samsonov aside. He let him regroup. He didn't even play him in the American Hockey League. And I know Craig Simpson has mentioned that that was important too, because you can send somebody down and suddenly, A, if they don't have success down there, now they're really questioning themselves. But even going down there can be, maybe I'm just an AHL goaltender. And there's nothing wrong with that, except if you're a guy that wants to be a successful NHL guy leading his team to playoff success. So that was one example of how Brad Treliving has been, you know, put his fingerprints on this team this year. And it may be the most important one, but beyond that, now all of a sudden we're late in the season. The late push is on. Tyler Bertuzzi is one of the hottest guys in the league. Yeah. Max Domi is excelling. And suddenly all the pieces are starting to fit. But with that said, there's 10 other teams I think you can honestly say have as good a chance. And we might be shortchanging that number. But and you think back to Mike Fuda's eighth place LA Kings team going and winning the Stanley Cup. So, you know, I can't honestly tell you that the Leafs are going to the Cup or getting out of the first round, because the task is huge in both ways. I mean, to play Florida in the first round, and things are changing so quickly. I mean, 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think people around Toronto were thinking anybody but Florida. And man, nobody wants Florida because Florida might be the best team in the East. And now, a couple weeks later, that's changed. And now maybe it's a better path for the Leafs. So I will suggest that there is no better path. You've just got to take whatever's given you.
Yeah.
And we still don't even know if it's going to start. And by the time people are watching this, it may change. But the Leafs actually have it in their hands to finish ahead of Florida because they're, what, 3 back game in hand and 1 against Florida. So you win the game in hand and you beat Florida in regulation and you could be at home. So does that even matter?
Yeah.
Probably doesn't. It may be, I think back, most of the best Leaf moments that I can remember in the playoffs are on the road. So including last year's Tavares goal in Tampa Bay. So long story to say that they're in it, but man, there is a long list of teams that could win it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, obviously in the rest of the Canadian picture is very intriguing too, what Vancouver's been able to do this year out here in Edmonton. You know, and obviously a good friend in our podcast and Mike Fuda and Tyler Toffoli going to Winnipeg and, you know, just a great story there. The rest of the Canadian picture, how do you see that unfolding in a way of like, obviously great years that they've had and, you know, it's tough to predict because we don't know. And you, like you say, there's these eight seeds get in. Florida last year get in, and you know, Mike Fuda is in the past. But you know, the Canadian picture looks pretty decent and pretty great this year, doesn't it, Chris?
It does. It does. And yet, again, I mean, you're starting off. I mean, you're going right into it. I mean, is Vancouver going to play Vegas or is Edmonton going to play Vegas? And, you know, what's Vegas going to be like in a week or two? They've been beaten up quite a bit, but everybody kind of knows that by playoff time, that might be much different. So, and Winnipeg's got to run that gauntlet in the Central, and it looks like they got to start with Colorado.
Yeah.
But to be the best, you got to beat the best, and maybe it's better. We've debated this too. Is it better to have that tough first round, and if you can get through that, the momentum can carry you a long way. But Winnipeg having to go through Colorado and maybe Dallas is daunting. And so, yeah, it's no matter where you look, there's somebody out there that I'm thinking of Walter Gretzky telling Wayne that no matter how good you think you are, there's always going to be somebody better or stronger or bigger. And fortunately, Wayne kept going and turned out to be better than anybody else. But yeah, it's going to be tough no matter where you look.
Yeah. Do you like the current playoff format, Chris, or would you like to see it go back to the way it was before, or are you just pretty happy? Like, you get the best of the best right now, but where are you at with the format?
Yeah, I'm a 1-8 guy.
Yeah.
I'd prefer that. And I usually did what would be the matchup if that was the case and how different it would be. And sometimes it's not different at all. And sometimes it's quite a bit different. Here's my thought. If you want it to be a divisional thing, then maybe we should play two games, one home and away against all the other teams outside your division, and then play five or six against the teams in your division. I mean, the Leafs just played Montreal for the first time. Well, they played them twice in a few weeks, but they went 4 months without playing them. And I think that's similar across the board that, I mean, it's good that you're having these late season divisional matchups. I get it, but you almost forget about, the rivalry between the Leafs and Tampa or Florida or Edmonton and Calgary, because it's been months between those games. So I like the thought of maybe playing five or six games within your division and then just the two home and home, if divisions are what you're thinking about.
Yeah.
Now the argument there is, well, sometimes you get a weaker division, but that is cyclical. And by the time, you get around to 2 or 3 years from now, the strongest division might be the weakest division. So, there's always going to be flaws.
Yeah. And I think you have a case there because, like, look, you and Craig called, that Battle of Alberta just recently. And then the following year when we came back the next year for the full season, those teams only played each other three times. And,
yeah,
you know, like that.
And I think one of the home games was the only home game in one of the buildings was like, well, it might have been October, November. And
yeah.
It might be over, before it feels like the season started. So, yeah.
Correct. Yeah. How special was that to call that Battle of Alberta? And obviously another historic call in Connor McDavid, winning the series in overtime. How great was that?
Yeah, that's it was amazing. I did the 91 Flames Oilers series, which for a long time and maybe still is the best series I've ever done. That went to overtime in game seven. And so being in Edmonton from 84 to 91, I know exactly what all that history is all about. And it was never better, I don't think, than then. But it gave you the same feel again that we were getting back to it. And unfortunately, Calgary's stepped back since then, because I think the makeup of those two teams in that series you're talking about, that could have been pretty interesting for a number of years.
Yes.
That's not the case. It's a different time now. Obviously, in the cap era, things are a lot different than they were in the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah. We'll finish up on this. Our podcast is credited through the Calgary Flames. We have a media pass there, and we'll finish up on getting a quick rip on what you think the Flames have done. And I think Ryan Huska has done an amazing job for what they've gotten traded out of the organization and what they brought into the organization. I think, Craig Conroy's done an amazing job in that aspect too. But where are you at with the Flames, the future? Obviously, maybe this is kind of that first real rebuild that they're doing, but they brought in some really good younger players. Great stories in Oliver Shillington coming back. And I'm 100% on board with Kelly Rudy on Hockey Night Canada talking about maybe this Masterson Award could go to, you know, Oliver Shillington for, you know, recognizing mental health. You know, this would be the first time someone's won that award, knowing that they've gone through some mental health struggles. But a great story, him coming back. But the future of the Flames, how excited are you to kind of, you know, see that and, you know, what you thought of their season so far too?
Yeah, I think Craig Conroy's done a good job. I think he's was in a difficult spot because I don't think everybody can tear it all down and start over. There's only, you know, there's only going to be one Connor Bedard every few years. And you can't have 10 teams tearing down, trying to get the one, you know, guy. And I like what he's done. And to find a guy like Sharon Govich is, to me, like a poster boy for why they've done a nice job this year and found the right young potential pieces and started to, you know, and Mackenzie Wieger's had a tremendous year on the blue line. So I thought there was a push there coming that they had a shot at the playoffs. I don't think it's the end of the world. And I don't know if you should be too disappointed in that because I think that his moves at the deadline and whatnot give you the sense that this can turn around quicker. It kind of like what the Canucks did, which is, you know, I think there were a lot of people saying full teardown in Vancouver and they, Jim Rutherford went and looked and said, you know, we've got some pretty special core pieces here. Let's surround them with some different people. And of course you get a guy like Quinn Hughes who elevates his game to Norris Trophy status and everything falls into place. So it'll be interesting. I'm interested to see or even hear what you think. The Markstrom noise before the trade deadline, is he a long-term piece or is that going to be the next piece of the puzzle in getting more assets that are going to be long-term pieces for the Flames?
Yeah, and in that, I would say, you know, obviously you got three goaltenders in that organization, and, you know, Dustin Wolf just got his first win on the road last night in his hometown in San Jose. But I do obviously, you know, that we were there, you know, the comments that Markstrom made to the media horde, you know, not being happy of how it was kind of handled. And, you know, Craig has said that, you know, things are okay. And obviously that's to us out in the media side, but you would hope maybe they can find a way to resolve that, you know, and he obviously is a great goaltender, but, you know, you're going to get a huge asset in return. And, you know, a lot of the conversation was New Jersey maybe shaping their organization to try to see if they can go get him. But, you know, I think Jake Allen's come in and done a good job for them there. He obviously played pretty good last night, didn't get the win, but, you know, he was there to hold them in. But, you know, you would definitely think the return on him is going to be huge if you do trade him. But I what you just said about Vancouver, you know, you got to look at that situation, and you do got some great young pieces there. Maybe there's, you know, a way you can get Huberto going a bit more and kind of get a little bit more out of him for the future. But Nazem Kadri's had a really great year. You know, Michael Backlund is, you know, just a tremendous person off the ice and a great player on the ice too. So, you know, I would think maybe you want to keep them, but, you know, a three goaltender system, obviously we know that doesn't really work in the NHL, and we'll see where that goes. But the asset you're going to get for him is going to be crazy, crazy big.
So. Yep. And we like Craig Conroy and like the fact that he was homegrown in the organization and a good guy who has a difficult job, but I think he's off to a pretty good start.
Yeah, and having Jerome back in the organization too in an advisory role helps out. They're just a great organization. And as you know, Peter Hanlon is probably one of the best in the game, you know, for the communication side and Sean Kelso, just great people there. But we appreciate the 45 minutes you've given us, Chris. It definitely means a lot. This is a highlight, you know, getting to do this. You know, I've learned that, you know, it is a hobby, but it's also take it very serious. And, you know, like you, I dreamt about playing in the National Hockey League. And, but, you know, the dreams maybe came to a different way of now being a part of it in this aspect. And this year I got that experience and getting a media pass and, you know, they've got great people like Mike Fuda and, you know, all the greats and Elliot Freeman and Ron's been great. And so just so many great people that you work with and got to work with along the way. And, you know, all the continued success. So looking forward to it. I know the playoffs are a grind. It's a lot of work, but all the best to you and your family, and hopefully, you know, it's a great year and we get to hoist, see a Stanley Cup, Canadian team win the Stanley Cup. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Joshua. Just, you and I both, we weren't good enough to be in the NHL. I was called a stay at home defenseman. The coach would have preferred if I just stayed at home. But anyway, the playoffs are a grind, but they're the best time of the year. So enjoy. Right. And I enjoyed being with you. Thank you.
Thank you.